The MMQB podcast is brought to you by FanDuel, the leader in one-week fantasy football with more winners and more payouts than any other site. Enter promo code THEMMQB at FanDuel.com for a bonus match of up to $200. We're also sponsored by the SeatGeek app, the easiest way to find a great deal, pay for your ticket, and get to your seat. Download the SeatGeek app and enter our code MMQB for $20 off your first tickets.
You've got Aqib Talib, who's going to be serving the one-game suspension for who'd he poke in the eye?
Dwayne Allen.
And then the excuse was, I was trying to poke his forehead. I don't really get that one.
Yeah, well, the excuse was I'm a lying sack of poo there, and I need to just take my one-game suspension and be a man next time.
Oh, man. I'm Robert Klimko. That was Andy Benoit. We are writers for the MMQB at Sports Illustrated. Today, we have an exciting podcast. We've hit the mid-season mark, so we're going to give you our personal all-pro teams. I haven't seen Andy's, and I don't believe he's seen mine, though I wrote it here in the shared document. You haven't peeked, have you?
No, I have not. I thought about sharing mine beforehand with you, but I didn't know how you wanted to do that.
Well, it would have been nice if I could have prepared for some arguments, but it'll be organic.
I'm sorry. I did. I thought about it. I mean, I thought thoughtfully about it. I gave it, you know, poor call on my end.
Anyway, we're going to talk about our top five games of the week. We're getting down to the real contenders here, leading off with a game that I'm excited about, the Patriots at Giants. You know, I had no idea that Tom Coughlin was 5-0 all time versus Bill Belichick.
Yeah, and two of those really stand out, don't they?
the Super Bowls. Yeah, that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah. He's 5-1 all time, right? Is that what you said?
Yeah, 5-1.
Yeah.
So before we get into that, we're going to talk about the biggest news events in football. Two of them this week. Andrew Luck is going to be out 2 to 6 weeks with a lacerated kidney and a partial abdominal tear. That sounds awful.
Yeah, and it sounds like they don't really know how long he'll be out, because, you know, 2 to 6 weeks, that's quite a window. I'll tell you this, I'm not saying a guy deserves to be injured. I don't want that to come across that way, but watching, and I know he got hurt, it looks like he got hurt on the run play, but watching the Broncos game, this was inevitable. This was bound to happen, and it's almost deservedly so. Not for him, but for the way they're protecting him. You cannot. They are so vulnerable up the middle of their offensive line and pass protection right now, mainly on long stunts with defensive ends looping around. Teams have done that to him since Jacksonville started it in Week 3, and Denver probably did it to him 20 times, and I bet at least 10 of them got a clean body shot on Andrew Luck. You cannot play in the NFL that way. You can't be an NFL team like that.
And their running back blitz pickup isn't anything to brag about either. I mean, early on in the season especially, I mean, they were getting beat with overload blitzes, and whoever they had in at running back is just standing around there with nobody to hit.
Yeah, it's not an athletic – overall, it's not an athletic pass-blocking group. The running backs might be athletes. Frank Gore's always been aware of that. But keep in mind, he's in a new team, and he's in a new system. And if the guys around you aren't performing, it's very hard to build continuity if you're at any position there.
Yeah. In this last game against Denver, the one thing that I noticed that I thought was a positive change for their offense was multiple tight end sets. They used it on 50% of their offensive plays. If you – remember games from earlier in the season, you rarely, if ever, saw two tight ends on the field at the same time, something that I questioned as a point of strategy for Pep Hamilton, and I was glad to see Rob Chudzinski employ those guys. The question is, with Hasselbeck now taking the reins for, you know, maybe the better part of a month, maybe even beyond that, how does the identity of the offense change? Do you still expect to see those tight ends on the field?
I do, because Chudzinski, that is his MO. For one, he was a tight end at Miami when he played, and then when he coached at the University of Miami, he did a ton with that. He was one of the pioneers, really, in two tight end sets. And then when he was at Carolina as their offensive coordinator early in Cam Newton's career, that's what he did with Jeremy Shockey and Greg Olsen, and he had a ton of success with it. He's one of the best two tight end offensive designers in the league. So I do think they'll keep playing that way. Now, what I do find interesting, when Hasselbeck was in there the first time, and mainly the Jacksonville game, all the Houston game as well, but they spread out a lot. They went wide formations, you know, three, four receivers. And I don't know if that was because they were playing a zone defense or if that's because that's the way they want to play with Hasselbeck. But when you go spread, the ball gets out quicker. And I think that is going to be the case with Hasselbeck. Almost any QB is going to get rid of the ball quicker than Luck. But I think that'll be the case with Hasselbeck. The question is, which formations do they do it out of? I think they'll find a way to do it out of two tight end, but will they spread those guys out at all?
Yeah. Well, before we jump into previewing these games, I wanted to talk a little bit about a non-NFL issue and just get your take on it. I spent a better part of this past weekend, Saturday night, Sunday, and Monday in Columbia, Missouri, where the football team joined in a protest that eventually caused the resignation or ouster, whatever you want to call it, of the president of the university and the chancellor. There aren't a lot of examples in the history of college athletics where players threaten to not play a game in order to get a president of the university fired. These guys using their, you know, athleticism, the revenue that they bring into universities as a bargaining chip in a way that nobody really even had the imagination to before. I was just wondering, you know, what was your take on that news, and what do you think the consequences of that will be?
Well, the consequences is what I find most interesting. My take on the news, you know, it's hard to have one without being on the campus and knowing what that culture is like firsthand. College campuses are a great avenue, a great venue for change. But the idea of a bargaining, I like bargaining chips, any kind of bargaining chip, because almost always, now the reason why, and this to tie it to the NFL, it's similar with holdouts. Almost always the meritocracy of it rises to the top, and whoever has the best leverage wins. And the best leverage comes from the most power, which is accumulated by your abilities and what you bring to the table. And in this case, we found out that the football program ultimately had more power than the school president in this realm.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about the top recruiters, the top revenue makers for most colleges. I mean, you've got your deans of each college that bring in certain amounts of money from alumnus and what have you. But the football team at Missouri combined with the basketball team, they're bringing in somewhere around $85 million. I mean, the 22 starters on that football team in terms of money fiscally are more powerful together than anybody at that university. And it's astounding that it took this long for players to realize that. And I think it could lead to a lot. I'd like to see it lead to some sort of unionization, some sort of collaboration between players on various teams in a way that has been attempted but hasn't been successful in the past.
Yeah, that would be an interesting step. And you wonder if that would have any ramifications to bring it back, because we're an NFL show, to bring it back to the NFL. That would be a few dominoes down the line, but what would those dominoes look like?
Yeah.
If it had ramifications in the pros.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the first thing I would demand if I was part of some student athlete group is that the NFL lift this 3-year waiting period to join. I mean, I'd say 1 or 2 would be more appropriate if we're talking about 18-year-olds who, you know, should have the choice here.
Well, that'd be a tough one, because that's a different battle that you fight in court. You're not fighting the NCAA with that, and so far the court cases have gone in the favor of the NFL.
Yeah. Well, let's not dwell on this developing story. I'm sure we'll talk about it later on down the road. Let's jump into these 5 games that we've picked out. The first one, Patriots at Giants. The Patriots are 8-0. The Giants are 5-4. Big news for the Patriots. They've lost running back Deion Lewis, who was out for the season with a torn ACL. Not really big news in the grand scheme of things. You still got Tom Brady. You've still got Julian Edelman, Rob Gronkowski. But for the Patriots fans who are wondering what that offense is going to look like, do you think it's Brandon Bolden or James White who is more likely to take over that lead role?
I think it depends each week. It'll depend on the opponent. I'll tell you this. Neither of those guys can do what Deion Lewis did for this team, though. It's to me, and I was surprised. I looked at Lewis's stats. They weren't gargantuan. To me, his impact on the field has been gargantuan. He's been better than Woodhead was for him, and he's been better than Shane Vereen was for him. And what those guys both did, especially Vereen, who's now a Giant, by the way, is give them the option to spread out in an empty set and throw the ball to the running back who's mismatched against the linebacker. Lewis was borderline unstoppable in that realm, and now they lose that dimension. You're obviously not going to throw to LeGarrette Blount. Brandon Bolden's not a split-out guy. Maybe James White becomes a guy. Maybe they go look for someone somewhere else, although, you know, the trade deadline's passed, so it'd have to be a really fringe guy, although Deion Lewis was a fringe guy in the first place. So I think this really hurts them. I don't know if this you know, it's not going to ruin their season per se, but to me, if they're an 8-0 team now, comparatively, maybe they drop the 7-1 in the second half. I think Lewis will have an impact on outcomes of games at some point.
Yeah. Interesting. You mentioned Shane Vereen being a Giant. I mean, he's got a very similar role in New York. Deion had racked up 36 catches to this point. And Shane Vereen not far behind with, let's see, 34 catches. So,
oh, is he that close? That surprises me. I mean, I knew he was productive. I didn't know he had 34 catches already, though.
Yeah. The Giants.
He's had one more game, too, hasn't he, though?
He has. The Giants' defense, I just want to talk about that a little bit. Here's an odd stat. They lead the league in passing yards allowed and takeaways. How often does that happen?
Yeah, probably not super often, because when you get the takeaways, you're taking away from the opponent's opportunities to throw. I mean,
right.
You steal plays and possessions that way. So that would keep passing yards down. The Giants are going to be a very up and down defense all year long. They have been and they will be. And the reason why, they're very well schemed. Spagnuolo's doing a good job, and they don't have a ton of talent, which is why they have to be well schemed. They have to win through strategy. And anytime you don't have a lot of talent and you're doing it with smoke and mirrors, at some point the mirrors get cracked and you're going to get leaks like we saw against the Saints a few weeks ago. And there'll be other games where they're going to look spectacular. I don't think this will be one of them, but it's an up and down defense inherently.
Excited for this one. Coughlin, as we mentioned before, 5-0 all-time versus Belichick. Now, two of those wins are coming when the 95 Jags defeated Belichick's Browns that year.
Oh, really? Okay.
Twice
okay.
That year. So it's not, you know, it's not as impressive as you might think. The second game here, Cardinals at Seahawks. The Cardinals are 6-2. The Seahawks 4-4, having nicely rebounded from a 2-4 start. The Cardinals are one of the only three defenses to allow fewer than 740 rushing yards this season. What is making them so special in run defense?
Well, they have Calais Campbell's an excellent player, and they've got a good rotation of guys around them. That's part A. Part B is they do a really good job with their front alignment. Where players line up along the defensive line really matters, because if you're in certain gaps and certain angles, you can compromise double-team principles. And they do that by putting their guys all inside of the offensive tackle. So it's called you probably heard the term a bear front.
Mm-hmm.
They do a lot of bear fronts. And I think as I'm talking about that, what occurs to me, they have speed on defense because Deion Buchanan, a safety, now plays linebacker full time for them. And so they've got safety type speed there. They also put other safeties on the field. That might be one reason they're comfortable playing in the bear fronts, because they feel like they have guys that can reach the perimeter on their own. And if you're in a bear front, you're not going to get double teams up to those linebackers, so they are more free to run. I think that's what's made them good. Remember last year, though, Russell Wilson ran all over them in that, I think it was a Sunday night game. He also got them for two big plays in the game in Seattle last year. So they'll have to have a plan for that, because it's not a normal run defense when you face Seattle.
Yeah. I'm very excited for this one, because it pits Carson Palmer, who should probably be in the conversation for, you know, midseason MVP, versus a
yes.
defense that has rebounded from, you know, starting the season without Cam Chancellor, giving up a ton of passing yards in those first couple games, to now having allowed fewer total yards than every team but the Denver Broncos, who I think most would agree are the number one defense in the NFL. What's fascinating to me is how Larry Fitzgerald, at this advanced age, continues to get open and continues to be so reliable.
I agree with you. I've got, in fact, not to spoil anything, but I've got him on my first team All-Pro that we're going to do here a little bit later. So that, I guess that is kind of a spoiler.
That is the definition of a spoiler.
Yeah, it is. That's the other thing they do that he's been critical on is and Chris Johnson's third in the league in rushing, which astounds me. And a lot of it's been the blocking for him. I don't mean to try to minimize Chris Johnson. He's having a fine season.
Did you know that he got shot in the offseason?
Yeah. Yeah. Someone told me that a few years ago. And then they visited Jay Glazer's gym, that same person. That's right. Yeah. But Chris Johnson's a guy that needs good blocking, and he's gotten it. And I don't think he's having a great season. He's not creating his own yards, but what does it matter? At the end of the day, you're getting production. I'm bringing that up because Fitzgerald's been a huge part of their blocking concepts with Chris Johnson this year.
Yeah. Let's move on to Vikings at Raiders. Hey, we're still talking about the Raiders at midseason. I continue to get a kick out of that. Can I tell you a quick Raiders story?
Of course.
Maybe I've mentioned on the podcast before, my grandma is a humongous Raiders fan. She got the whole
you've mentioned that like 20 times.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So she got the whole family into it. The MMQB and our boss, Peter King, kind enough to offer Grandma a voice of the fan column. So last month, she writes about the city's relationship with the Raiders and how she doesn't want to see them go, but she kind of questions whether or not current fans really understand the history and the connection and the underdog mentality that the team was born from in Oakland. And so the Raiders reached out to me and they said, we want to talk to your grandma. We want to invite her to a game. So they put her up in a hotel for the Steelers game this weekend, her and my mom. And they give them her pregame passes on the field. So they introduce her to the president. They meet all these famous ex-Raiders, Lincoln Kennedy among them. And at one point, Mark Davis is just standing around alone in their general vicinity. And Grandma says, hey, can I take your picture? Because she likes to take people's picture. And he says, why don't you take a picture with me? And so she got a picture with Mark Davis. She's all crying and excited. And she's like, I loved your father. And he's like, I loved him too. I miss him. And I just thought it was such a cool thing that the Raiders did. And I just wanted to say that.
That's a great story. What a thrill for her. What an absolute thrill. The Raiders didn't used to, as much as people love Al Davis and the people who know him do love him.
Yeah.
They didn't have a reputation for that kind of friendly PR in the past, at least not that I've heard. Under Mark Davis and with the current public relations regime, they've been wonderful in that regard.
Did you read the ESPN profile of Mark Davis from a few weeks ago?
I did not. Who wrote it?
I actually forget because it's not somebody who regularly covers the NFL, I don't believe. But it's wonderful. I mean, it's required reading if you're an NFL fan just because you rarely get to glimpse into the lives of owners. I mean, the guy still drives like a creepy old minivan from the early 90s. And,
a minivan from the early 90s?
Yeah. And he it's like a van. I forget what it's called. But he drives 45 minutes every couple weeks to get that weird bowl haircut that he has.
Yeah, because nobody within 45 minutes of him is willing to put their name to that haircut. I don't cut Mark Davis's hair. What are you talking about? He's never been in here.
All right, let's actually talk about this football game here. The Raiders, for all their success on offense this season, finding out that Derek Carr is a legitimate quarterback, that Amari Cooper is a star in the making, that Latavius Murray is a reliable tailback, on defense have been absolutely porous against the pass. Teams have passed against the Raiders 66.5% of offensive plays. You really don't even need to run against them.
Well, and they're hard to run against, to their credit, so that might have some factor in it. Obviously, with what Pittsburgh and Antonio Brown specifically did last week, it's going to be more of the same for them. I don't know if it'll be in this game so much because of the way Minnesota plays and Adrian Peterson, of course, but it's not a great pass defense right now, even though you've got guys that are playing pretty well. I think TJ Carey's been fine at safety. Obviously, Charles Woodson, here's another spoiler, I've got him All-Pro. I would guess you do too, but I don't know because I haven't looked. But the secondary is playing okay in zone cover. They do a lot of zone. They've mixed in more man-to-man. What I have found surprising is our guy Khalil Mack hasn't flashed the way he did last year. He's been fine, but not great. And Alden Smith's been pretty quiet as well. That was supposed to be the strength of their defense, was that edge rush.
Well, I in watching some of these latest games here, I think Khalil Mack is getting a lot more respect than he got last year. And I think that's
certainly, yeah. And it's deserved. He's a very good player. I thought just watching the film, he had more impact plays last season though than he has this season.
Sure. On the other sideline, we've discussed at length Adrian Peterson this season, but I think it's worth noting that he currently leads the league in rushing with 758 yards. This despite what I believe is a pretty one-dimensional offense. When they're in single back, they're probably going to hand it off to Adrian. When they're in shotgun, they're probably going to play action and throw the ball, because Adrian has just been absolutely ineffective when taking handoffs out of shotgun for whatever reason. How is it that they've been able to dominate consistently in the run game with this very predictable personnel groupings?
Well, Peterson is tremendous at creating his own yards. That's kind of what I was trying to get at with Chris Johnson there. Peterson's a classic example of a guy better than his blocking, because that inside offensive line for them with Michael Harris at right guard, Fusco at left guard, and Berger at center, that's easily a bottom 10, probably a bottom 5 interior O-line in the NFL.
They don't get any push.
They don't. It's not like they stink or anything like that. I mean, NFL lines don't stink usually, but they don't consistently get a push, no question. So it makes Peterson's impact all the more impressive. Another thing, you notice they don't run outside with Peterson very much. I don't know if that's because they don't trust those offensive linemen athletically to get to the perimeter or what it might be. Maybe it has something to do with Peterson's style, although he looks to me very good when he gets sweeps and off-tackle runs. I think that shotgun thing that you mentioned, he's a downhill runner. He's never been very patient. And when you're in shotgun, you don't have the initial momentum when you're starting off. And also, you don't have as many options and gaps to hit. You pretty much have to stick to the front side or limited to one cutback as a runner. Almost all running backs like I formations more than shotgun formation.
And the other thing that makes him so effective out of an I or with a lead blocker is that, you know, you're able to pound the middle until the defensive ends are committing to stopping you in the middle, and then you bounce it outside. When you're running out of shotgun, I think the assumption, especially when you're playing the Vikings, is that it's going to be a play action or Teddy Bridgewater's just going to straight up throw the ball. So you've got, edge rushers coming off the edge there, and if you don't have the interior lineman to get that kind of push, then you're not seeing the lanes up the middle, and you also don't have the opportunity to bounce it out.
Yeah, shotgun's a more, and this would be a good segue to our next game, Dolphins and Eagles, because shotgun, that's a discussion with DeMarco Murray too. Is shotgun, you're just more limited in what you can do running the ball.
Yeah. Dolphins at Eagles. The Dolphins are 3-5. The Eagles are 4-4. Jordan Hicks is done for the year with a torn pec suffered against Dallas on Sunday night. How does this affect the Eagles' defense?
Probably not a whole lot. I hate to say it that way, because Jordan Hicks has been very, very good for them, and he's improved with each snap, it seems, run and pass game, which is uncommon with a rookie linebacker. But they do have Kiko Alonso back healthy, and Michael Kendricks is back. Alonso was only playing in the nickel. Now he'll probably play every down, and maybe D'Amico Ryans gets in the mix again. But as injuries go, this isn't the end of the world. You certainly want Hicks in there, but it's not the end of the world.
Yeah. If you're looking for changes in Miami's offense since Joe Philbin was let go and Dan Campbell took over as head coach, look no further than Lamar Miller. He's averaging 17 touches a game now under Dan Campbell, as opposed to 11 with Philbin as the head coach. To me, he's had a pretty impressive season despite a very limited workload.
And this brings us back to the shotgun discussion, actually, because Campbell has done less shotgun and has gone to more under center snaps for Tannehill. And the results, or at least in the first two games where they were very hot, the results were outstanding. And they've been a more controlled offense in that regard. And Miller has often been the guy that's reaped the benefits.
Let's get to our last game, Kansas City Chiefs at Broncos. We mentioned the Raiders earlier at 4-4. The Chiefs at 3-5, fighting for that wild card spot in the AFC West, presumably behind the Broncos, who are 7-1 after last week. I think it's a good thing to get that first loss under your belt. I know it's kind of counterintuitive, but
under your belt, as if there's a pursuit of losing or something.
Well, it's like it forces you to reconsider and evolve some of the things that you've been leaning on during an undefeated start. I just, whenever I was on a team that started out 5-0, 6-0, 7-0, or whatever, we started to rest on our laurels. And you know, I'm referring to high school, but I think that that same mentality happens in the pros.
I was surprised watching the film on that Colts game. I was surprised Denver lost that game because I thought they did everything they wanted to do against Indianapolis. They just had too many execution gaffes on offense, their offense. A protection breakdown here and there, a drop pass. Manning missed. I was off target a few times early on, and that stuff added up for him. So in some ways, it's the best kind of loss they could possibly have to speak to what you're talking about, because they didn't do anything that exposed them. They didn't have any new weaknesses. They didn't have mental mistakes as much. They just had poor execution at times, which is the kind of thing a coach can get on a guy about in a meeting room when he needs to rekindle something.
Yeah. I'll tell you why I think Kansas City has a chance here, and then I'll tell you why I think they don't. You've got Aqib Talib, who's going to be serving the one-game suspension for who did he poke in the eye?
Dwayne Allen.
Dwayne Allen. And then the excuse was, I was trying to poke his forehead. I don't really get that one.
Yeah, well, the excuse was, I'm a lying sack of poo there, and I need to just take my one-game suspension and be a man next time.
Oh, man. And then you've got DeMarcus Ware, the pass-rushing outside linebacker, aggravated back. Both of those guys likely to be out. I think that leaves the window open for the Chiefs in a small way, although I love Shaquille Barrett as a replacement for DeMarcus Ware. He's a guy that I'm going to be talking to this week in Denver who has...
Oh, good. Yeah, he deserves... I'm glad you said that. He deserves it. He's had an excellent rookie season. He's been better than Shane Ray, in fact. Who's also played well, by the way.
What's so unique about his story is that he came in here, and I'm in Denver right now as a little bit of a, you know, behind the scenes to the podcast here. But he came to Denver, you know, with a diet of nothing but junk food, essentially. And they hooked him up with a nutritionist, and he's transformed his body in a short amount of time.
How short a time?
I'm going to talk to him tomorrow, so I'll let you know then.
You know, I started eating organic food about 6 months ago and lost 25 pounds in the first, like, 2.5 months.
Really?
Yeah, the more, like, liberal my diets become, the better shape I've been in. You know, like, the more left-wing my diets become.
You're talking about...
Because I stopped shopping at Walmart, which I kind of consider a right-wing diet, and went to Whole Foods.
Oh, my God. With that, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, FanDuel. There's a reason the entire sports week builds up to NFL Sunday. Drama and competition at the highest level. Now, with FanDuel, you can get in on the action. There are thousands of leagues on FanDuel that cost as little as $1 to enter, and you can cash out in the very same night that you win. Now, when you use our code, TheMMQB, at FanDuel.com, you get a bonus match of up to $200. FanDuel is the leader in one-week fantasy football with more winners and more payouts than any other site. They will pay out over $75 million a week this football season. Over 1 million players have won money playing fantasy sports on FanDuel. Now it's your turn. If you're watching the games anyway, try it out. Go to FanDuel.com and click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner. Use the code TheMMQB and sign up now. Daily fantasy sports are sweeping the nation. Find out why at FanDuel.com. And once again, use our code TheMMQB. Okay, let's jump into our All-Pro selections. I took a lot of, you know, I put a lot of thought into this, so I'm very excited. Andy?
I know you did because you moved our recording time back a few hours to work
to do it. Yeah. Okay, so what? How do you want to do this? You want to just go quarterback, running back, just back and forth?
Yeah, I think we can do that. We can jump the ones we agree on. We don't like, I see we both have Tom Brady. I don't think we need to talk about Tom Brady for 5 minutes. You know, we can probably go to the guys that we disagree about or, you know, the guys that don't get recognition as much.
Okay. So you and I both have Tom Brady. I mean, if anybody has an argument with that, He's got two interceptions on the season. He's thrown for 2,709 yards. He's the MVP as far as I'm
concerned. He's undefeated.
Yeah. Let's move on to running back. I'm taking Todd Gurley, the rookie in St. Louis, and simply because I think he's done the most with what opportunities he's had. He's got 5.6 yards per carry, which is the most among the top five or six producing running backs in the league. That's why he's my guy.
Okay, I actually put two on mine just because the rotational thing. I'm not going to do that for every position. I had Freeman from Atlanta. Gurley I considered, but he didn't have enough games because of early in the season. It's a midway point thing. He's only played about five or six, I believe. And I got Adrian Peterson as my other one.
Adrian Peterson, not a bad choice. We talked about what he's been able to do with a bad offensive line. Moving on to receiver. Now, I picked three guys because, you're...
Yeah, I did too. That's the way it ought to be now.
Yeah, I think so too. Antonio Brown, wide receiver for the Pittsburgh Steelers. He's productive with or without Ben Roethlisberger. Certainly more with Ben Roethlisberger. But if you watched him against the Raiders, I would say he's the most complete all-around wide receiver in the NFL. My second and third wide receivers are Julio Jones, who has statistically been a freak, and Steve Smith. Now, this is more of a sentimental pick because he's out for the season with a torn Achilles, and he's my favorite player to watch in the NFL. But he was also extremely important to any kind of success the Ravens have had on the field in the first half of the season.
Well, but the problem is they haven't had any success in the first half of the season.
They haven't. They haven't won any games.
Well, okay. Okay, so he was integral part of the – I believe he was in for one of their wins, right? And then he left in the midway point of one of the other ones. Look, right. I get what you're saying. I got I can't talk about wins so much. I have DeAndre Hopkins as one of my receivers, a guy that honestly they're okay, but they're not – he's not, obviously winning games for him. But and I have Fitzgerald, and my other one's Julio Jones, who I think has been far and away the best wideout in the league. He's gotten more double teams than anybody, and he still has the biggest numbers. Hopkins, I'll be honest with you, I don't like his game. I struggle with him. I look at him, and he's not explosive to me. He doesn't look very quick.
He's slow out there. He's definitely slow out there.
Yeah, by NFL top receiver standards, he's certainly slow. And having said that, no one's been able to stop him this season, and at some point, you have to give the nod to that. And if if I had to pick between him and Antonio Brown of who I want to play with, I'm taking Antonio Brown 8 days a week. But if we're talking about who's been most productive or who deserves the recognition, I thought Brown was a little quiet when Roethlisberger went out. Probably not any fault of his own. Vic didn't push the ball downfield. But at some point, you have to split hairs when you're talking about the very best of the best up here.
Yeah. DeAndre, I almost put on here just because I like the guy so much personally, and I hate to admit that sort of thing will sway my decision, but this isn't...
Well, that would have given you two out of three receivers would have been, just total biased, like how an 11-year-old picks a team. This is my favorite player. Steve Smith's my favorite player.
Right, right,
DeAndre Hopkins is my next favorite guy. Do you own any of these men's jerseys?
I do not. I'm not a jersey guy, but I did meet DeAndre... before he got drafted, and I did a little profile for USA Today. He's got one of the more interesting and really tragic backstories that you'll ever hear in the NFL. I mean, just the string of deaths that he has encountered and overcome over the course of his life is, book worthy, movie worthy.
Oh, that's too bad and also interesting and nice for him. You know what I'm saying? That's impressive to move a life forward like that.
Now, I'm going to guess that we both agree on the tight end spot here, Rob Gronkowski.
Yep.
Okay. Don't need to say much more about that other than the fact that there's a pretty big drop-off after him. I mean, I'm curious, who would be your number two if Rob wasn't in the league?
Greg Olsen. Barely beats out Eifert because Olsen's got less talent around him and he's been just as effective.
I'd probably go with Eifert just because I think he's a more well-rounded player.
I have no problem with that.
Okay. Left tackle, I'll go with a Bengal here, Andrew Whitworth. He has yet to give up a sack. He's yet to even let Andy Dalton get hit.
I did not know that about him, but I went through my film notes on any left tackle that I thought was worth anything this season, and Whitworth was the one that stood out, so that's who I have as well.
Wow. Okay. Left guard, I'll go with another guy who has given up no sacks and also has been instrumental in Buffalo's running game, Richie Incognito. After a year removed from football, I think a lot of people think, you know, he's going to be rusty. He's not going to be in football shape. But for a lot of these guys that take a year off, it's a blessing because you're able to actually fully recover from all of the little injuries that persist over the years.
And I would imagine that's especially true with an offensive lineman because it's just a low-impact, continuous hitting that goes on in the trenches with them. I agree with you. I've got Incognito as well. I'm not a stats guy, so I didn't see that, but it was kind of similar to the Whitworth thing. Incognito's been, to me, the best left guard in the NFL. I've got Josh Sitton as my other guard. I see here that you did right guard, which I really admire the integrity of that. I couldn't bring myself to do it because right tackle to me is just, it's hard to find an elite one in the NFL. So I did offensive tackle, offensive guard, but you've got Zach Martin here. I did Sitton. I think Incognito gets the slight nod over Sitton if we're talking about just left guard.
Okay. Well, you know, the reason I did that is because I'm thinking about the actual positions they play. Isn't that what they do?
Yeah. No, I think that's no, for all pro, they just do general position, That's always driven me nuts. I don't like that because most guys, it's not like teams are lining up, hey, your left tackle this snap, right tackle that snap. You play the same spot every snap. And there's a big difference between those five positions. So I think the way you did it's the right way. I didn't do it that way because, you know, I'm trying to be part of the masses, I guess.
Okay. Well, let's move on to the center spot. I've got Ryan Khalil, who I think has been a tremendous run blocker in Carolina. And part of the reason that they can get by with a couple of mediocre tackles, I mean, just that interior line of Carolina has been such a catalyst for their running game and in turn kind of helped Cam Newton get better looks downfield.
This is not a good podcast because I have Khalil for the exact same reasons you do.
Okay.
Maybe I did. You sure? Maybe I did send you my all-pro team beforehand.
Nope. All right. My right tackle, and I'm going with an actual right tackle, is Ryan Schrader, who was he's on the Falcons. He was a UDFA, undrafted free agent, in 2013 out of Valdosta State. And I think if you watch Falcons games, he's been instrumental in some of the success that Devonta Freeman has found as a runner.
I'm racing through all the right tackles right now, just looking at the team's logos, which, you know, jogs in memory. I think he has been the best right tackle in the league. He used to be a negative standout guy. His feet looked like they were glued to the floor at times. Mm-hmm. That has not been the case this season. I don't think he showed up in my notes once, which in his situation, that's a really good thing. I like that you call him out in a positive way here because he's certainly, to me, he's the most improved right tackle in the NFL, if nothing else.
I just love his story. I mean, undrafted out of a small school like that, and you're able to stay with the team through two coaching regimes, that means that whatever you were doing behind the scenes when you thought nobody was looking got noticed by the new staff.
Yeah, good point. Good point. I'm looking at your defense now. I see why that you got sensitive about Khalil Mack back there.
Yeah, I think he's an all-pro.
You've got Mack and you've got Cliff Averill as your DB or DN/OLB, which is a good way to do that as well.
Yeah, I just figured I'd pick 1-4-3 guy and 1-3-4. So Mack is my 3-4 outside linebacker. Cliff Averill is my 4-3 defensive end. There were a number of ways that you could go. I think this is one of the deeper position in terms of star players in the NFL.
You know, I agree, but looking at the outside backers this year, and so I did J.J. Watt, and I classified him as a DN. You got him as well as a defensive lineman. That's probably not anything shocking to give away that he's on your team. I did Muhammad Wilkerson, who's also kind of that hybrid 3-4 end type guy that, you know, is he an interior lineman or an outside lineman? But looking at the outside backers across the league, and I went with Von Miller and Sean Lee, who's totally different players because they're in different schemes. I didn't think there were as many dynamic outside linebackers this season as there have been in past years.
Yeah, and when I say star outside linebackers, I'm referring to the pass rushing guys.
Yeah, because Averill, I mean, we know what you mean with Averill. Just we're talking edge rushers, essentially.
Right.
And Sean Lee would not classify as that, so I've got him in for different reasons. I think he's great in run defense. He's been a good part of their blitz concepts. Von Miller, I don't think, needs much explanation. I wish the league would get a little clearer on how these guys are classified, although I got to be honest, I don't know how you would do that because so many teams move so many guys around right now.
Well, honestly, I mean, you could just so many teams run nickel that you could just run, do the all-pro team as a nickel defense.
Well, that's the base defense anymore. I mean, yeah. Nickel is more than – or if it's, I think it's more than half the snaps. If it's not, it's certainly the predominant package and close to half the snaps. Yeah.
My two interior linemen, I've got Aaron Donald, who I think most agree has been having a monster season in St. Louis. I've got J.J. Watt. I wanted to just talk about a third guy here that I wouldn't put in the top two, but I think he's up there is Kawan Short, who he's one of those guys where you go to a camp and there's a buzz about him. Like, he's going to be a stud, and he didn't play all that much last year. I mean, he was like the third or fourth defensive lineman in the rotation, but you hear about these guys at every training camp and then you kind of roll your eyes and think, oh yeah, whatever. Yeah. Kawan Short. Okay, fine. And then he comes out and he plays every snap and he's just dominant.
I've got him on my team. I think he has been dominant. I've got him along with Aaron Donald as defensive tackles. He's also played defensive end at times. Good first step, but he doesn't have to win with his first step. He's won with other ways as well. Run defense and pass rush. He's got 5.5 sacks, I believe. He's a good all-around player. I'll give you one more since we're trying to like shine a light on some under-noticed defensive tackles. Mm-hmm. And I almost put him on the spot in front of Short because I just watched Vikings film tonight. It's Linval Joseph. He has been the best run-defending nose-shade tackle in the NFL this season. Better short area, not just short area, all lateral movement. Better lateral movement than any nose shade in the NFL.
Let's move on to linebackers, your more traditional linebackers, the guys that are dropping back in coverage on some of the passing snaps. You mentioned Sean Lee. He's not on my team, but I can't argue with that pick. My two linebackers, and I only picked two because I'm going by the nickel defense philosophy. Luke Kuechly, another Carolina Panther, and K.J. Wright. And the reason I put K.J. Wright on here is because I think he's one of the most improved players in the NFL this season. I remember watching their games last year and feeling like he was a liability in pass coverage. And I think he's become the opposite so far this season.
He is long and athletic, and he's been a good pass defender for him this year. I know he got matched against tight ends in their two-man coverage in the Super Bowl. He got on Gronkowski, and he got beat for a big play at the end of, I think it's at the end of the first half.
And wasn't it a touchdown? Was that?
Yeah, it was. Like a 22-yard touchdown, yeah. I thought about him. I read his notes very carefully. I didn't go with him because I thought in the first few games he had more negative plays than other guys. He wasn't very disciplined in the week one Rams game. Again, we're splitting hairs at the top of it. I think K.J. Wright's as good at his job as anybody in the NFL. My guys, I've got Jamie Collins as a stack backer and Clay Matthews as my other stack backer. And that's probably the two most athletic linebackers in the league, too, now it occurs to me.
All right, let's run through the DBs quickly. I've got Chris Harris, the Broncos corner, as my starting corner. I kind of struggled with this next one, but I went with Desmond Trufant, the Atlanta Falcons corner. I think he's been as advertised, although he did intend to get his hands on the ball more this season, and he has zero interceptions thus far. My nickel corner is your boy, Tyrann Mathieu. I'm curious to see if he's on your team.
I thought about him as well. I considered him a safety. I know he probably has played slot corner more. He didn't quite make it for that negative plays reason as well. He's been beaten man coverage a few times. He's had more positive than negatives. I like Trufant. I went with him. The reason he's got zero picks is because there's been multiple games where he hasn't been targeted at all this year.
Yeah.
The one that people, I went with Revis, which I know everyone's going to, it's going to be the Polamalu thing from last year, which is, you know, hey, you're stuck in the past. He's not as good anymore. Polamalu wasn't as good last year either, but the first half of the season, he was still the best strong safety in the league last year. And I think we forget not to compare these guys to their former selves, but to compare them to their current peers. And Revis is asked to do more than any corner in the league still. Plays on an island, on a true island, no safety help, more than any corner in the league, and on one of the league's best defenses. He's had success in most weeks. Amari Cooper got the better of him, but that's really been his only negative game. The one that you're missing, Klemko, that I think the advanced metrics people are going to be all over you about on Twitter is Josh Norman.
Yeah, the PFF guys love him, and, you know, I wouldn't disagree with that, but I agree with you on Desmond Trufant. I mean, he's commanding more respect than any corner in the NFL right now.
Okay. Safeties. Oh, you don't have Charles Woodson at safety, I see.
I don't have Charles Woodson at safety just because I love to watch the Patriots' defensive backfield operate. I think Patrick Chung and Devin McCourty are two of the best cover safeties in the NFL.
Both of those guys have been asked to play man-to-man on wide receivers at times this year, and both of them have succeeded with that, which is – I don't think there's another team in the league that has asked two safeties to play man-to-man on wide receivers. Some teams do it once in a while, but you've got two safeties able to play man-to-man on wide receivers. That's huge. I like those picks. I've got Woodson for the range, the awareness, the playmaking prowess, and I've got Harrison Smith from the Vikings because I think his speed – does more for their disguise concepts than does a ton for those disguise concepts. And that's the nexus of Minnesota's defense. It's nice that we agreed so much on that. I was a little surprised about that.
Yeah. You know, I don't watch nearly as much football as you, but I do notice the guys that stand out.
Yeah. Let's tell you about the SeatGeek app. NFL fans are watching history right now. The Bengals, Panthers, and the fired-up Patriots are still unbeaten. Peyton Manning is on the brink of passing Brett Favre in career wins and passing yards. You want to go to these games? You want to take a look at them? Use the SeatGeek app. Has a ton of ticket options all over the stadium. And when you use our code MMQB, you get $20 back on your first purchase. Here's how it works. You download the SeatGeek app on your iPhone or Android. It's free, and it takes less than a minute. Then you search for your event, find a great deal, enter the code MMQB, and when you complete your purchase, SeatGeek sends you a $20 check to your house. SeatGeek pulls in ticket options from hundreds of sellers online and shows you the best deals automatically. When you shop on SeatGeek, you're seeing virtually every ticket available for your event all on one page. They rank every available ticket with a deal score, so you show a color-coded map that's easy to read and easy to interpret. SeatGeek's mobile app makes the ticket buying process seamless, easy, and safe. Download the free SeatGeek app today. Enter promo code MMQB in the app. SeatGeek sends you $20 once you've made your first SeatGeek purchase. For the NFL, college football, the best concerts even, use SeatGeek app, promo code MMQB.
Before we get into the end of our show where we take a Twitter question or two and give you our recommended reading, I want to welcome Dave Zirin and his show Edge of Sports to the Panoply Network. Dave offers something different, an unfiltered political take on sports that doesn't hide its head in the sand. Edge of Sports with Dave Zirin. Search for it on iTunes and Stitcher or find it on panoply.fm. Twitter questions. All right, let's get to Rick's question at OC Color D Guy. He asks, did the Colts lay out a blueprint to beat Denver's defense for other teams to follow, presumably?
Yeah, no, they did not. Denver's defense outplayed them. The Colts did not get opening against man coverage. I'm still trying to figure out how the Colts accumulated as many points as they did because it looked fairly one-sided to me. I don't think it's any sort of blueprint at all.
It seemed to me that they crossed the goal line more times and they kicked the ball through the uprights.
I mean, it really did feel like that. Usually this stuff adds up. You say, well, here's exactly what they did. But, gosh, Denver hit Andrew Luck all game long. You know, the Colts did do a few good things with misdirection or deceptive elements to take advantage of the man coverage, things like sending a receiver in motion away from the direction the run ball was going or something like that. But no, there wasn't any kind of blueprint. It was just a well enough played game by Indianapolis, barely, really.
When your quarterback has his spleen lacerated, can you really even claim victory?
Well, it's a pirate victory is what they call those. Yeah.
Last question. John Spur at Spurzo asks, who's on your list of players you would never yell at? I like that one. I really got to think about that. You go first.
Well, and he means, so I guess John Daigle, who put together this outline and gathered the best questions for us, he said this. He believes this guy's referring to Clinton Dix's spat with Julius Peppers on the sideline. So it's like, I guess it's like the player you'd never yell at out of respect. Is that what it is? Is that what it is?
I mean, I like to think it's out of fear, just because I think that's okay. a more entertaining question.
All right, I will do, you know what? I think it's one and the same. I'm going to say Tom Brady.
Mm. But the thing
because
is,
I hear he's ruthless.
Tom Brady's not going to punch you in the face, though.
Well, is any player going to punch you in the face on the sideline besides, you know, I mean, I know, I don't want to make light of that, but, you know, yeah, besides the insane players, the handful of them.
I mean, that's who I was going to say, Greg Hardy. He's a crazy person.
So you would not yell at Greg Hardy?
Never.
Well, doesn't that give power then to his kind of behavior?
No, I mean, it just makes him a bully.
Yeah. Who's your next? Who's the second one? Who's like a more fun one? Since Greg Hardy's like so toxic right now that yeah. It's, you know, it just is a downer to even mention his name. Congratulations, Greg Hardy. You bring down the room thousands of miles away from you just at the mention of your name.
You've ruined the podcast, Greg Hardy.
Yeah, you've ruined the podcast. You have another one?
Player I would never yell at. I don't think I would yell at Adrian Peterson just because he's so physically imposing, but he's also such a sweetheart.
Now we're running into the same problem we had with the Greg Hardy one. That's also kind of a downer.
Oh, no. All right. We
Try again.
We got to go back.
How about, let's see, Richie Incognito, maybe? No.
No.
Jonathan Martin? I wouldn't yell at Jonathan Martin.
Okay. All of this is getting cut.
No. We got to keep this.
Before we get ourselves in trouble, let's go to the recommended reading of the week. Did you do your homework?
I did, and I'm going to get myself in more trouble because for all of you who think the media is left-wing biased, and I have no wing. Like, I'm not right-wing or left-wing. I just, the more I think about this stuff, the more I think it's too complex to, like, just categorize. But for good writing, I read The Republican Class War by George Packer, and it is total left-wing bias stuff, takes all kinds of shots at Republicans, but it's really well put together and entertaining, and by that I mean it reads well, it flows well, and there's a great turn of phrase about every paragraph. So I recommend that from just an entertainment standpoint. If you get fired up about this stuff, maybe pass on it, though.
Okay. Mine is a story published 2 days ago on Medium.com. It's Living and Dying on Airbnb. It's about the various people who have died for different reasons while staying at Airbnbs. So if you want to be scared to death out of renting one of these places, go ahead and read it.
Okay, very good. Ominous, too.
Yeah. So this has been the MMQB podcast. Feel free to tweet us at #MMQB podcast. We may or may not get to your questions. Thank you to everybody who wrote in. Thank you to our producer, Dan Bloom, our researcher extraordinaire, John Daigle. He's the one who describes himself that way. I just want to be clear.
No, I put that in for him. On the outline. Yeah.
That's very nice of you. Yeah. Until next week, I'm Robert Klimko. That's Andy Benoit. That's our show. Okay, all of this is getting cut.
No. We got to keep this.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.